Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Steve Bortstein on the Freak This in just a few moments. Sandy Barber coming up tomorrow. Dick Girardi on Friday. Dan Baker on Monday. And Tony Knopp on Tuesday. Big lineup coming up. And we're going to try and get Alan Bestwick on next week about the Indy 500. Personally, I have a lot of respect for Alan. It does a great job. Indy 500 is obviously a premier event. And also, it gives Sean and me just a slice of peace for a few days. Because we are just hassled beyond words about this internally. Not by Drew, not by Roger.
No.
Not by normal people. But
it's kind of a good news, bad news thing with Alan Bestwick. He was one of the 100 that got called out and got his papers, but he did stress not too long after the news broke on his Twitter account that he would be calling the Indy 500 one more time.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the whole thing stinks, okay?
We've said it before. You just don't want to wish that on anybody.
No, not anybody. You know, say if you freely walk away from something, you should have to work your way back to it, don't you think?
Oh, I saw what you did there. Yeah.
Yeah.
The light switch is always turned on.
Well, we hope to get Alan on next week because Alan's a first-class guy. I really like him a lot.
Yeah.
And he does a great job on the Indy 500. So, and it's a big, obviously a huge event. All right, play-by-play call of the day. Sean Grand and Cedric Cornbread Maxwell, the 1981 Finals MVP. The Celtics, Kelly Olynyk, carries them to the promised land.
Isaiah, behind the back, bounce pass, gives Kelly an open three. Got it!
Oh, man.
The true north, strong and free. 19 for Kelly Olynyk. Celtics by 8 in game 7.
That was good. I like that one. Celtics won game 7. They get game 1 at home as the number 1 seed. Games 1 and 2 will be at the TD Garden when the Celtics take on LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Tonight, it's Spurs and Warriors game 2 in Oakland. No Kawhi Leonard tonight. Great article in Sports Illustrated about Steve Kerr we'll get to in the final half hour. Now let's bring in Steve Bortstein. 1340 Fox Radio, Louisville, now in Baltimore for the Preakness. Steve joins us 2 weeks ago before the Derby. Steve, welcome back. It is great to hear you again, my friend.
Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it a lot.
All right, let's talk about this is a change in pattern for Todd Pletcher. Todd Pletcher will run the Derby. He'll run the Belmont. Rarely runs the Preakness. Rarely. I think that he's only done it 8 times. He's only had 8 horses entered in the Preakness. He also has done something that's completely un-Pletcher-like. He did not take the horse back to New York. He brought it to Baltimore. He doesn't do that either. When you've gone through this, what are your thoughts on that, that there's been a change in what he does?
Well, for the large part, with the exception of the year that Todd Pletcher won the Kentucky Derby with Super Saver, there was really no need to go to Baltimore. So you don't win. My concept is if you don't win the Derby, unless you have a real need to run in the Preakness, you don't run in the Preakness because you put your horse through so much leading up to the Kentucky Derby. So
completely
he didn't
agree,
bring the
completely,
horse.
Completely agree with that. Completely agree.
So,
yep.
So I think, so to that sense there, and normally, since he does most of his operations are out of Belmont Park or out of New York, anywhere in New York, he would normally bring his horses back to New York. So this is the exception. This, much like Super Saver, is the exception to the rule. He brought Super Saver to Baltimore. They didn't win. They moved on with their lives. That's like you normally would. So with Always Dreaming, the major difference also is Todd Fletcher doesn't run his horses in 2 weeks. You
right.
look back at 2017, his campaign, January 25th, he breaks his maiden. He doesn't run till March 4th. Then he doesn't run again till April 1. Then he runs the Derby on May 6th. So all of those races are typically 4 or 5 weeks spaced apart. Well, he doesn't have that luxury this time. Now this horse is going to come back in 14 days. So there's a number of differences here that are kind of forced on him because he wants the Triple Crown. And why not? He's the only horse that can win the Triple Crown, obviously. But now you come back in 14 days.
But again, that's not, as a trainer, what he's used to doing. So how does he have to adapt? I mean, that's my big picture question here, is that in order to make this happen, because he is fortunately in this circumstance, how does he have to adapt to something that is not his normal pattern as a trainer?
I think it's the same as any other trainer, because it's not really a lot of patterns. It's not really a training pattern for a lot of these guys. You want to have your races kind of spaced apart. Whether you're Bob Baffert, you run your horse the first Saturday in April.
Right.
You don't run again till the first Saturday in May. So it's a pattern that isn't comfortable for a lot of trainers. It's not comfortable for a lot of horses. And again, it's why the Triple Crown is so unique. It's why the Triple Crown is so difficult to do. It's why it's one of the hardest achievements in any sport, whether it be human or equine in this case. It's one of the hardest achievements to do. But I mean, if you ask any trainer, you know, is this the optimum way of doing this? No, under no circumstances is it. And that's why it's so hard to do.
And he also has a wild child that he's trying to train. Always Dreaming
sure.
is not exactly the pet around the house. He will take exercise riders and he will give them a ride and they'll pretend like they're controlling him. So
right. Yesterday during a workout at Pimlico, he turns into a little bit of a handful. Now you can look at that a number of ways. Okay, the gas tank is getting filled back up and he bounced back easily. You can look at it that way. Or
right.
you can look at it like he's like, what the hell am I doing out here? I don't want to do this right now. You're bugging the hell out of me. And now I got to come back and race again this weekend. So there's a couple of ways of looking at it.
And those are definitely different ways of looking at it. When they went through the mud, the first thing that everyone talks about is that Johnny V and Johnny Velasquez, I mean, we the last time you were on, Steve, we had a really great talk about the kind of jock that he is. The two things that you notice when they were done is that the horse's face was completely clean and Johnny V's goggles were completely clean. He ran that horse in clean air the entire mile and a quarter.
He read the pace perfectly of the race. He knew there was one legitimate speed threat. One of the other speed threats in the race sort of got taken out right at the start. So it gave Johnny Velasquez prime position. And the move he made to get to the outside of that horse that was on the front end that day was brilliant. That was the decisive move of the race, because otherwise he's going to be pinned in. The horse on the lead is going to keep pinning him in. So what did Johnny V do? Once they came out of the quarter turn, out of the clubhouse turn, he steered the horse just to the outside of that horse so he had dead aim. So that, again, to your point, he had clean goggles, the horse had a clean air, he didn't have to worry about anything, he didn't have to come for a million lengths out of it, and it just made for the perfect trip. And that's why Johnny Velasquez is one of the predominant riders of this generation.
Something I look at when a horse is done with the race, I look at the next 100 yards. It's like, okay, they're done, or, well, there's still more in the tank. When that horse ran 100 yards past the finish line, did you sense there was more in the tank?
I think there's more in the tank for Always Dreaming, but I was having a conversation with a friend of mine just a little bit ago about the fourth place finisher, Classic Empire.
Yes.
He had, of all the horses in the race, one of the worst trips of all.
Yep.
He gets absolutely kind of crushed around at the start a little bit. He's wide around the far turn at the top of the stretch for like a split second. And I'm not saying this because I picked him. All right, I'm kind of saying it because I picked him. But right, at the top of the stretch, for like a split second, you thought he had a bit of a chance. And then he just flattened out. But here's the difference between flattening out and losing ground. He only lost a quarter of a length in the entire length of the stretch. He only lost a quarter of a length to the winner.
Right.
So he wasn't exactly tiring. I think he was on the wrong part of the racetrack. I think the start caused him. The trip hurt him a little bit. So to the question about Always Dreaming, how did he come out of the race as far as the 100 yards after the gallop? He looked fine.
Yeah.
Because, again, he didn't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. You know, he was right in the right position the entire time around the track. The pace turned out to be not demanding. It wasn't overly taxing. It was a track he clearly liked. So I don't think he came out of the race any worse for wear, nor do I think Classic Empire came out of the race any worse for wear. Now, the difference will be this time, maybe a difference in post positions, maybe a difference in trips. There's a couple of new shooters in the race that we had to see in the Derby. So a couple of those things could be a factor.
And another factor, too, is you're not going to have the 20-horse cluster bomb that the Kentucky Derby happens to be. You're not going to have that this time. So with a normal-size field, how do you start breaking down in a normal-size field that these horses are actually used to running in?
I think you break it down like any other race, especially a route race over a distance of ground, is you look at pace profiles, you know. And to the point of the 20-horse field, there was a great piece written online the other day by a great horse racing writer by the name of Ray Pollock, and in the piece he quotes Gary Stevens, one of the predominant riders of this generation, saying that they need to stop with the 20-horse field because eventually there's going to be a catastrophe. It's not like any other race. And I made the comparison earlier. You wouldn't take the Super Bowl. You wouldn't take the NFL playoffs. You wouldn't take the college football playoffs and have, you know, elimination games, and then for the national championship game or for the Super Bowl, then say, hey, by the way, we're also going to put randomly placed landmines on the field.
Right.
Just for giggles. Yeah. You wouldn't do that. So the Derby, they do need to address this at some point in time. But to the question about the pace of the race and how do you look at this race, you look at it like any standard horse race now. It becomes a question of pace. It becomes a question of, you know, how do certain horses favor this type of racetrack. There's a myth that Pimlico is a speed-favoring track all the time. Yeah. Not always the case.
That's right.
There's a myth that the tighter turns make it a more speed-favoring track. Most tracks are going to be typically forwardly placed favoring tracks. Most racetracks are like that. So I don't think that's such a big factor. To the question earlier about Todd Fletcher, you're going to hear that all week long about, oh, Todd Fletcher is terrible at Pimlico. He rarely goes to Pimlico,
doesn't
so
go
it's
there.
Not really a stat to me. He doesn't go there.
Right, he doesn't
so
go
I think
there.
You look... Right, so I think one of the questions you look at for this race is the angle of the fresh horse. There's a few of them. There's a horse called Conquest Mo Money, who ran a gallant second last time out of the Arkansas Derby, just missed to Classic Empire that day. Prior to that, he was second here in New Mexico in the Sunland Derby. Prior to that, he'd won three consecutive races. Great connections, underrated connections, very good barn. I think he's definitely someone who is going to at least be a pace factor in the race. There's another horse that's also another new shooter called Cloud Computing.
Right.
Sort of a lightly raced horse, but trainer Chad Brown is really one of the up-and-coming trainers in America right now. So he's someone that might be a factor in the race. He's probably still learning the game a little bit. He's only raced three times, but he's someone you want to look at a little bit. But those would be the two sort of new shooters that if you're looking for the fresh horse angle, Always Dreaming, Classic Empire, Gunna Vera, hence they all ran just recently. The two big new shooters have had a month between races. So if we go on the assumption that having that added time might help them, that could be a factor.
Yeah, because my question about Pletcher is just, you know, you're a pro. There's a certain way you go about doing things. Now you got to make an adjustment. And that's just a bigger picture question about him, not about...
Sure. It's a great point because it is out of Todd Fletcher's wheelhouse.
And out of most wheelhouses, too, as you point out.
Sure.
This is not a normal thing to do, just like, say, Always Dreaming comes out of this. Having to come back 3 weeks later also is not normal. There's a lot of...
With all the added pressure on top of it, then,
right,
yeah.
Exactly. All right, so give me an idea, your initial read as to three horses we should take a good long look at when the day is done.
Always Dreaming is going to be the favorite in the race. You're not going to get a lot of value on him, but he's clearly the horse to beat in the race on Saturday. Clearly he's the horse to beat. And yes, it's a great story thing, and everyone's going to get excited about that. So obviously he's one you want to worry about. He's the one you're going to fear the most. Classic Empire is going to improve off of his race, I think, in Kentucky. He's going to improve dramatically. So he's the horse I look at second best. If you're looking for that third horse, I would look at Cloud Computing and Conquest Mo Money, the two new shooters. I don't know if they're good enough, but I know that they're improving. I know that their races leading up to this were good enough that the connection fought enough to bring them into these spots. So I think they're horses you want to look at. I'm not interested in Gunavera. I'm not interested really in Hence. I think looking at Lee just clunked in for second in the Derby. So I don't really look at those as major shooters in here. But I think you look at the three major players, it's Always Dreaming, Classic Empire, and either Cloud Computing and Conquest Mo Money to get in the top three.
I like it. All right. It's always a pleasure. It's a great back and forth. I mean, that's what I like. You give us some great material, Steve. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Anytime, sir.
That is Steve Bornstein. That was a good back and forth. A lot of fun. Enjoyed it. All right. We'll take a break. We will come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great article in Sports Illustrated in the upcoming issue on Steve Kerr. I think as Sean knows, I like to read a lot of articles about other announcers that have achieved in our field and what they've, you know, and so forth. But I also like to read a lot about leaders, what makes great leaders. You know, something that you can use not only on the personal side, but also at the same time, you can recognize certain qualities in the people that you work with that are expected to be in leadership positions. For example, Sandy Barber's on the show tomorrow. I'm always around James Franklin. I'm always around Patrick Chambers. They have to be leaders. You know, Sandy is the CEO of a $100 million organization, Penn State Athletics. Patrick Chambers as the, you know, as the CEO of his $10 to $12 million operation and a $75 million or $70-plus million operation in football. I mean, you have to be leaders in each one of them. Sandy overseeing James and Patrick, but each one overseeing their section of the company. So I'll read a lot about leadership along the way. And, it, you know, some are political leaders. I mean legitimate political leaders, not obstructionists or things like that. They're like, that's not leadership. You got to be able to, in my opinion, have to have the ability to do something. And so there'll be certain people. For example, I've read about Winston Churchill. I've read about President Kennedy. You know, people that I looked at as either President Reagan, people I consider like leaders that would, you know, understood the concept of it and what it means to sometimes stick by principle because you know it's right, as opposed to twisting in the wind when it's convenient for you. And Steve Kerr is one of those guys that has succeeded at almost everything he's ever done. He joins an Arizona basketball program that's 4-24 for Lute Olson. And then by the end of it, they're an NCAA tournament team, and he's the leader. I mean, here's a one who had to overcome the murder of his father in Beirut by terrorists. Who made it in the NBA. Who made it? I mean, to me, losing him as a TV analyst, watching him do the Final Four for a couple of years, like, this guy's good. I mean, that's Dick Girardi and I said that to each other several times. Like, I hope he doesn't go into coaching because this guy's good. But he went into coaching, and he chose the Warriors over the Knicks. Well, Sports Illustrated, a piece that is coming up, goes into 25 items on Steve Kerr, and it is Chris Ballard that writes it for Sports Illustrated. It's on SI.com now. But it shows that, you know, people have asked, well, look at, they're succeeding and he hasn't been there. And the reason they're succeeding is because as a leader, he put the structure in place to succeed. So we'll talk about some of these. And it's the article is entitled The 25 Leadership Lessons of Steve Kerr. And we'll go through some of these for you that gives you an idea, because leaders come in all shapes, sizes, forms, different levels in life. You don't have to be the CEO of a company to be a leader. Some people are natural leaders and other people are natural followers. Sean just told me to go to a break.
Where Sealands Grove, Sunbury, and Lewisburg turn first for news. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. Time now for the sports bozos of the day. I love when we're in this era in the last, I'd say since 1992 or so, of language, parsing of words. John Skipper told an audience at the Minskoff Theater for ESPN's annual upfront presentation, "We at ESPN are optimists. We look forward to a great season and expect a great selling season. Of course, the current environment forces us to be realists as well as optimists, so let me be up front. ESPN is responding to change." Change was forced from the top there, John. That's what happened. I mean, the selling season should be good. The economy is starting to kick into a little bit of a gear here, which is great. It doesn't mean it's completely back, but it's starting to kick into a gear. It should be a good selling season. You got some good product to sell, too. So here is what the new ESPN lineup is going to look like starting on January 2nd, 2018. 6 a.m., they're going to re-air Scott Van Pelt Sports Center. At 7 a.m. will be the Mike Greenberg Show. Okay, so the Mike Greenberg Show is going to be on ESPN. Now, Mike and Mike, that means it goes away. And you're saying, well, okay, on ESPN2, there will be no talk show on ESPN2. It's going to be Sports Center. So on ESPN, Sports Center, Scott Van Pelt re-air. At 7 o'clock, the Mike Greenberg Show. First Take will be at 10 a.m. And Bomani Jones and Pablo Torre will have their own show from noon to 1, Outside the Lines at 1, NFL Live at 1:30. The Jump is at 3. What the heck is The Jump? I have no idea. Who knows?
Oh, The Jump, the Rachel Nichols hosted show, the NBA show. Yes.
Okay, well, good for her. 3:30, Sports Nation. 4:30, Highly Questionable. That would be, that's Dan Le Batard, right?
Yes, yeah. and Poppy.
Yep.
Yep.
Then Around the Horn at 5, Pardon the Interruption at 5:30, 6 o'clock, SC6. But here's a big difference. I'm a little surprised that this kind of slipped through the cracks here, because I'm reading the story and they don't talk about this. Right now, SC6 is a one-hour show. On this grid here, it's a half hour. They're going to cut a half hour out of the SC6 show already in a year, because they're going to re-air Pardon the Interruption at 6:30. Wow.
Less than a year.
Less than, you know, it would be a year. Well, I guess it's less than a year. I guess they start, what, in February? They're going to knock them back a half hour already. Now, remember we had John Orrin on the show, and he said, look, the complaints are long and loud, but the sales are really good. But they're going to knock a half hour off of it. Now, Rob King, the ESPN Senior Vice President, Rob has been on our show before, Penn State roots. King said that SportsCenter will be branded as part of Greenberg's new show, providing updates for viewers of sports news of the previous day. The full edition of SportsCenter on linear television will air at 6 as part of the Jamel Hill-Michael Smith-led SC6. But they don't talk here about the fact that, according to this grid, it's a half an hour. It goes 6 and 6:30, pardon the interruption, re-air. They were asked today about whether or not they would be cutting more people. And Rob King said, in the end, we will always be evaluating our business. That means either restructuring or adding. Just have to watch over time because every business has to meet what its audience needs are. That's a little bit more, it's deeper than that. It's also what Disney as a corporation, you know, what's your profit margin, as we know. Profit margin still means you're making money. So Bob Lee said that the ESPN issues are about technology, not ideology. But the bottom line is, in the end, what drives the network is not your daytime programming. It's what live sports you have. And so, I mean, when you sit back and you're looking at when you're sitting there and you're looking at the daytime lineup and so forth, and we've talked about the amount of money, for example, that they spent on, for example, the NBA. But that still is what drives the sports network. It is your live programming. You know, what games do you have on? Your games drive it. And for ESPN right now, the driving force for the next, 3 weeks or so, 3.5 weeks? They've got the NBA Western Final, and then they've got, on ABC, the NBA Finals. All right, Steve Kerr, Chris Ballard, Sports Illustrated, posted online today on SI.com on Steve Kerr. Long conversation with him, and most of it dealt with before he had to step aside. Then in the middle of it, he does step aside because of the intense pain that he's been going through in surgery. They talked about him being away. So 25 leadership lessons of Steve Kerr. He said, number one's the obvious reason, that they have a lot of talent. Durant, Green, Iguodala, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. And Kerr will be the first to tell you, he says, look, I've got talent. Now, I'll say this. It is ridiculous to believe, though, that you can plug in anybody to be the head coach of the Warriors and get the same results. That's not true. You've got to have the right mix, because you can take great talent and you can foul it up. Two, Kerr possesses some secret, super secret coaching sauce. And look, he's just himself. His son says that his dad was coaching him when he was seventh grade. And he said that his demeanor on the sideline is exactly the same as it is today. He says, pretty relaxed. He says now he broke a clipboard once or twice. He said, like he did in the NBA Finals. But they said, look, for the most part, he is pretty even-keeled. Next one was number three. Pretty much everyone loves Steve Kerr. Coaches like him. Chris Ballard writes, coaches like him, players like him. The media would clone him if possible. They said, it's not impossible to not like him. But you know what? You don't have to do this and be a jerk is the bottom line. As some people say, you can do what he's done and you can get away with being a jerk. And it's not his choice. He doesn't. It's not him. Now, at one point in his life, he worked for Greg Popovich. He learned a lot from him. Now, they do have different press conference demeanors or interview demeanors. There's no question about that. But if you read the article in Sports Illustrated, you know what you're going to find? One picture of Steve Kerr. You want to know why? That was one of the demands. The only demand he had for doing the article was they were only allowed one photo. And they said, look, we need to put a photo in. So Kerr said, hey, look, all right, me standing there pointing during a game, whatever. He says, but only one. And this is what he learned from Greg Popovich. He said, the moment the players see you making it about you and not the team, when the coach gets the endorsements, poses for magazine covers, hosts a radio show, you start to lose them. Now, this is on the professional level. Collegiate level is a little different. But that's interesting. The guy on the street, number five, tells a story about he and the writer, Chris Ballard, going to through Oakland, going to a favorite Vietnamese restaurant that Steve Kerr likes to go to. And guy came up, and I think he is on the street or whatever, and he was showing a picture he had painted. And Kerr stood there and engaged him, talked with him, and then when he was done, gave him $20 to go get more paint and brushes. I said, it's just the way he is. He makes time for people. He listens to them, wishes them luck, whatever. He says, Steph Curry and Tim Duncan are the same way. They always give time and don't act like you're intruding on their time. He's always done that himself. The team is out there running the show. Kerr always asks for input from players. And he'll call on certain people. Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala. He says Iguodala has a great basketball mind, but doesn't speak that much. He said he got the idea from Popovich. Popovich one day is in a film session. And they're talking about whether to go over or under a screen. Popovich says, we're going to go under the screen. And Avery Johnson, who's now the head coach at Alabama, says, no, we got to go over the screen. And Popovich was firm with him. He says, no, we got to go under. And then, as Kerr remembers it, Johnson slams his fist on the table and says, you don't see what we see out there. He said it was a good reminder, he says, because Popovich is one of the best in the world, and his point guard is, you don't see what we see. On the sideline, we can see something unfold, but we can't feel the speed at which it unfolds. The players have a better call. That's respecting your personnel. Interesting. 7, Steve Kerr is fluent in Grindr. It talks about his college career. 4-24 when he gets there, Lute Olson's first recruiting class. They get him in there, and it turns out that he busts his backside every single day and makes everybody around him better. Kerr also prints out letters to his players. The player can reread it, digest it, sleep on it. And he, you know, if a player's down and out, he'll write them a letter. Number 8, JaVale McGee, who's, you'll get to know him as time goes here. Great reclamation project. Iguodala recommended signing him. Jaren Collins works with him, and because the player was able to recommend it, it made Steve Kerr feel better about going that direction. Which then brings us to Bob Myers, Jerry West, and Joe LaCob. 3 great guys. They all work together, and that Kerr is carrying out management's higher plan. In other words, he works with higher management all the time and respects what they do. Hell no. You're like, okay, what are we going here? Draymond Green has a tendency to take some shots, And Kerr will scream that out when he takes certain shots. And they say Green is one of the great coaching challenges of all time. He and Kerr battled at times. He says, but he understands what he's screaming out when he says it. Which brings us to the game against the Pelicans at number 11. They are playing mediocre basketball. Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, they're sleepwalking their way through the game. Not, you know, it's just whatever. A 14-point lead becomes one, so Kerr calls timeout. Now, Draymond Green's having a really good game. Doesn't have a turnover, has missed only one shot in the game. He's getting rebounds. He's playing really well. He's playing hard. They get in the huddle, and he looks at Green and starts yelling at him. He says, get your backside into the game. And Green's like, what's he yelling at me for? I'm the one playing out there. But he knows that Green is going to get mad. And he knows that Green is then, when they go back on the court, he's going to yell at the other guys to get their head out of their backside and play. Okay? Coaching, you've got to be at times like the fox. The ability to have fun with people. He does that. That's 12. 13. Kerr keeps insisting the world is bigger than basketball. He's, you know, people are talking about running for politics. And he says, nah, I don't want to do that. He says, but we should speak our minds. It's important. It's an important time to do so. There's a lot of craziness in the world. You've got to call it out. And he says, anybody can call it out. What if Steve Kerr were with the Knicks right now? To be honest with you, if he were with the Knicks right now, they'd be a better team, in my opinion. Because he just knows how to handle players. He knows how to handle people. But he also saw something special in the Warriors. That's why he took that job, which is 15. He lets Steph Curry make plays. He lets, you know, he stays away from creating divides in the locker room. And he doesn't play games in practice. Kerr's a fan of everybody, which is 16. Harrison Barnes says Steve Kerr is forever in your corner. And it's not just the players, it's the coaches as well. He will pull aside before a game the number 12 guy and say, look, if it gets in a certain way tonight, I'm going to play the 11 guy, whomever 11 happens to be tonight, but your turn's coming up. But I want to make sure you understand before the game what's going on. There's always that communication going. Sitting down with Pete Carroll. Yeah, Carroll told Kerr, give me your core, you know, what are your core values? And Kerr said, thought for a moment, said joy. He says, okay, joy. That has to be reflected in your practices every day. That he loves what he does. He's got to be himself. He can't be the guys that he worked for before, like Phil Jackson and Greg Popovich. He can take things from them, but he still has to be himself. Said he had a lot of ideas. He knew he wanted to play fast and loose, but that was it. And he knew he did not want to imitate his mentors. He said, Popovich is military, pound the rock. Then, of course, there's his parents. We talked about Malcolm Kerr, who in 1984, while president of American University in Beirut, Malcolm was shot and killed on his way to work. Steve was a freshman at the University of Arizona at the time. And, of course, that has had a lasting effect on him. Kids on the plane. Popovich allows it. And so does Steve Kerr. He'll take Nick. He'll take Maddie. The players will take their kids. Steph Curry will take Aisha, Riley, Dell. Klay takes his dad, Michael, sometimes. Draymond Green will take his mom sometimes. Matt Barnes, twin sons. Excuse me. Appropriate fear. He does just enough. Every once in a while, make a decision where, you know, you got to show them you're mad once in a while about something. The Warriors are contagious at 21. Mike Brown is now the interim coach. You say, hey, look. He says, I've changed just by being around him in the organization. Kerr has emotional intelligence as he watches the Warriors run through drills. The psychologist was struck by Kerr's approach. Rather than barking orders or standing and watching, arms crossed, typical postures of authority, Kerr moved around the court, checked in on players. Sometimes he focused on a star, more often a reserve. He shared a joke, a subtle touch of the shoulder, a quick quip, something, or a quick teaching point. One finger up. Last year when Kerr had to step away from the game, Luke Walton tried not to change a thing. Continued to rebound for Draymond Green before the game as an assistant. Say you form a fist. If you put one finger out, individual, then you try to punch whatever, you break your finger. If you keep the fist together, you can hit it properly. Kerr says, model the way, inspire to share a vision, challenge the process, enable others to act, and encourage the heart. And then 25, who they are. This Monday, Kerr showed up at practice to be with the team. At heart, Kerr is a competitor. Yet unlike some competitors, Kerr does not chase credit. Some people crave that feeling of things falling apart when they're not there, says Bob Myers, who runs the Warriors. He says Steve Kerr is the opposite. Instead, Myers uses the analogy of a parent whose kids go off to college. If well prepared, the kids will flourish without parental guidance because your teachings are still there. Just fly it down. I just gave you just little tidbits of Chris Ballard's outstanding article. But when you get that copy of Sports Illustrated, you want to look at it online on SI.com. I think it's well worth the read. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The phones are ringing off the hook at Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Hyundai because right now we're offering the best savings in Hyundai's 30-year history, like up to $6,750 in total savings on the 2017 Sonata. It's called the Better Than Ever Sales Event, and it features the biggest total savings ever offered on Sonata, Elantra, Tucson, and Santa Fe Sport. So there's never been a better time to buy than the Better Than Ever Sales Event. Every Hyundai is also backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty. America's best warranty. So visit Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Hyundai now before the biggest savings in Hyundai's Hyundai history are, well, history. Better is the reason to buy a Hyundai, Hyundai, and the Better Than Ever sales event is the reason to buy now. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is Hyundai your home for, well, better. Better prices, better vehicles, and a better buying experience. Sunbury Motors Hyundai, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and online at sunburyhyundai.com.
Hyundai!
All right, Sandy Barber on the show tomorrow. Talk about leadership. We'll have her on. Looks like we've got Lafitte Penkai the third on the show tomorrow as well. Is that tomorrow?
Keep our fingers crossed for him tomorrow, 4:35, and talk more Preakness.
Yeah, exactly right. And then Dick Girardi coming up on Friday, Dan Baker on Monday, and Tony Knopp on Tuesday. I'll be in the studio on Tuesday. I was just checking our grid. A lot of people seem to put in for vacation Tuesday.
Ooh.
And it seems like most of the requests came in yesterday. Huh. I don't know what that means, Sean.
We'll look into it.
Don't look too closely. I know the answer.
We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.